Gento material life. So almighty Arm Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? In other words, he does not attain perfection in Krishna consciousness, and because he gives his life to an unsuccessful endeavor, he does not also attain perfection in the other sphere, that is material life. Isn't that what your mama and father have always told you? Son, who says that you are successful in Krishna consciousness? Maybe when you try, you give this up, huh? And then you have no education. You will become a zero in material society. In this way, you have not attained your so-called spiritual success, and not even a decent material life. Isn't this the argument? So you can see, it becomes very interesting. This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. But for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. So now the answer comes. I want to make, because this is very important, I want to put the question now in a challenging way to the devotees. So many devotees have blooped. Who says that you will be successful? Now you're young and naive and idealistic. But life will change. Huh? Then this will be all for good for nothing. You see, this is an important question. Now, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Pata Naiveha Namutra, Vinashastasya Vidyate, Nahi Kalyana Kritkaschit, Durgadim Tata Gatsati. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. And the purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Narada Muni instructs Vyasadeva as follows. Chakrasa dharmam charanam bujam harer vajan abhakvo tapatetato yadi yatra kvavabhatram abhut amushyakim kovata apto vajatam svadharmata. If someone gives up all material prospects and takes complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no loss or degradation in any way. On the other hand, a non-devotee may fully engage in his occupational duties and yet not gain anything. For material prospects, there are many activities, both scriptural and customary. This is not the verse, it is going on in the purport. A transcendentalist is supposed to give up all material activities for the sake of spiritual advancement in life, Krishna consciousness. One may argue that by Krishna consciousness, one may attain the highest perfection if it is completed. But if one does not attain such a perfectional stage, then he loses both materially and spiritually. It is enjoined in the scriptures that one has to suffer the reaction for not executing prescribed duties. Therefore, one who fails to discharge transcendental activities properly becomes subjected to these reactions. The Bhagavatam assures that the unsuccessful transcendentalist has no need to worry. Even though he may be subjected to the reaction for not perfectly executing prescribed duties, he is still not a loser, because auspicious Krishna consciousness is never forgotten, and one so engaged will continue to be so even if he is lowborn in the next life. On the other hand, one who simply follows strictly the prescribed duties need not necessarily attain auspicious results if he is lacking in Krishna consciousness. The purport may be understood as follows. Humanity may be divided into two sections, namely the regulated and the non-regulated. Those who are engaged simply in bestial sense gratifications, without knowledge of their next life or spiritual salvation, belong to the non-regulated section. And those who follow the principles of prescribed duties in the scriptures are classified amongst the regulated section. The non-regulated section, both civilized and non-civilized, educated and non-educated, strong and weak, are full of animal propensities. Their activities are never auspicious because while enjoying the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, defending and mating, they perpetually remain in material existence, which is always miserable. On the other hand, those who are regulated by scriptural injunctions and who thus rise gradually to Krishna consciousness certainly progress in life. Those who are following the path of auspiciousness can be divided into three sections, namely, the followers of scriptural rules and regulations who are enjoying material prosperity. Second, those who are trying to find ultimate liberation from material existence. And third, those who are devotees in Krishna consciousness. Those who are following the rules and regulations of the scriptures for material happiness may be further divided into two classes. Those who are fruitive workers and those who desire no fruit for sense gratification. Those who have the fruitive results for sense gratification may be elevated to a higher standard of life, even to the higher planets, but still, because they are not free from material existence, they are not following the truly auspicious path. The only auspicious activities are those which lead one to liberation. Any activity which is not aimed at ultimate self-realization or liberation from the material bodily concept of life is not at all auspicious. Activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity, and anyone who voluntarily accepts all bodily discomforts for the sake of making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness can be called a perfect transcendentalist under severe austerity. Again, activity in Krishna consciousness is the only auspicious activity, and anyone who voluntarily accepts all bodily discomforts for the sake of making progress on the path of Krishna consciousness can be called a perfect transcendentalist under severe austerity. And because the Eightfold Yoga system is directed toward the ultimate realization of Krishna consciousness, such practice is also auspicious. And no one who is trying his best in this matter need fear degradation. So here we have the answer to this question. Every little bit of Krishna conscious activities is of the greatest transcendental result. Even if someone does not attain full perfection in his Krishna consciousness, whatever he has achieved so far will accompany him into his next life. This is so because all the results of Krishna conscious activities have a permanent and eternal status, but all the results which are performed in material consciousness are temporary and fleeting. Now I want to give you a few examples for this statement. Once there was a boy who went with his girlfriend into a forest to to have a picnic. But both of them quarreled so fiercely that they couldn't have their picnic. Now it so happened, he was so frustrated, he left the picnic cart, picnic basket, all nice foodstuffs there in, and he went out and fasted the whole day. So it so happened that the place where they wanted to take their picnic was the ruins of a Nrsimhadev temple. And the day where they quarreled and where he subsequently fasted was the appearance day of Lord Nrsimhadev. So because of fasting on Lord Nrsimhadev's appearance day, he attained the full mercy of Lord Nrsimhadev and in his next birth became Prahlad Maharaj. Hare Krishna. This was a spiritual activity, we call it Agyata Sukriti. Jnana of course means knowledge and A means unknowing. An unknowingly performed spiritual activity which had high results and transported the active person or the doer to a very good situation in his next life. So I can well imagine in this circle of devotees, friends and well-wishers to the movement, such a story might be accepted. But for the atheistic doubter, it doesn't make much sense. So let us try to study why spiritual activities have such a potency. In this world, actually, the only thing which is of reality is the jiva and the holy name. What in the dham? Let us not talk now about the dham. Let us talk about Sydney or Moscow or Frankfurt. Whenever you watch such a town, what do you see? Earth, water, fire, air, ether mixed up to form the objects of sight, that means form the objects of hearing, which means sound, and so on and so forth. The material and elements, in other words, take their shapes in an endless array of transmutations and form the different sensual objects which are perceived by the conditioned soul through his knowledge acquiring senses. However, this material energy is not actually what the conditioned soul thinks it to be. The material energy is only a shadow of the spiritual reality. It is a chaya. Chaya means shadow. Yeah. Imagine in the night you walk over the street of Sydney. You go, I'm always bringing this example in Germany in preaching programs. Say you go this one road. Here's a house. There's another road. So all of a sudden, you see in your sight, in your direction, some terrible monster coming up. And you hear some sound. And immediately you think, oh, you see the shadow, right? You see the shadow of a form. Oh, some Dracula, who jumped out of a movie, will come around the corner and will drink my blood, which is very sweet from all the sweet pots. So, and what happened in actuality was that an old lady came that way. The light produced a shadow, and a cat died because she had a miscarriage that made the sound. Yeah. So your senses are perceived. Why? Because you do not see the substance, but only the shadow, which is that old lady, and that's a certain shadow. So in the same way, this material energy or material life, material energy is deceptive to someone who is not in Krishna consciousness. Because what the conditioned soul will see when he looks out of his senses is not what is the reality. The conditioned soul, under the dictates of his mind, probably you are sleeping, this is very important, because this is your city, this is under the dictate of his dictation, I think is the English word, of his mind, he will see a sense object which looks to be enjoyable or which he rejects. Isn't it? The functions of the mind are sankalpa and vikalpa. Whenever we come into a given situation, our minds tell us this is very nice, or our minds tell us this is not very nice. But this interpretation of the material energy is illusory, because the material energy is not very nice, but it is also not very displeasing. It is the material energy of the Lord. In a sense, I have to correct myself. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, both pleasant and if you think this is good or this is very bad, it is a great mistake, because the material energy is a prison house. It is all bad. It is neither especially good or especially bad. Just like if you are in a prison and you begin to think, oh, what a nice tapestry, so artfully done. Let me investigate the tapestry with my monocular, is it monocular? Or this glass which makes everything bigger so that you can see the details.
Lenses,
yes. This is mad. It is not very good in the prison. It is bad to be in a prison. If you find something good or something not so good, I mean, this duality is not very, very wise. It is when we are in a prison, we should concern ourselves with freedom. So, in the similar way, the mind, the life of the conditioned soul, who is under the dictation of his mind, is illusory, because his attraction to the shadow of Krishna, to the material energy, is an illusory attraction which will keep him bound forever. So, activities in Krishna consciousness, however, are activities which are not concerning themselves with the shadow, with the enjoyment of the shadow. The activities of Krishna consciousness also do not concern themselves with the rejection of the shadow, like the Mayavadis. The activities of in Krishna consciousness are taking place in a realm which are outside of the shadowy world. The activities of the in Krishna consciousness take place. There are three factors which are eternal. It is a living entity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and activities of the living entity in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These three things the servitor service and the receiver of service, they are spiritual and they are the substance of Krishna consciousness. So even if you manage to just do a little activity of that in that spiritual realm, your life is successful. Even if you should, due to some seeds which are in the heart, some material desires, go into become an unsuccessful yogi. The unsuccessful yogi, after many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. Or he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. This is important. The unsuccessful yogis are divided in two classes. One is the unsuccessful yogi who is a devotee who bloops after 1 year. In other words, a personality who after a short practice of transcendental life falls in, comes down. It is said here that he goes to the planets of the pious living entities and is born into a family of righteous people or in a family of rich aristocracy. The other, in other words, a yogi who is unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga, takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. And Prabhupada gives a very interesting commentary. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalists generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord, and both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. Many devotees who are now in the movement of Krishna consciousness are such unsuccessful yogis. They become very attracted at a certain point in their life towards Krishna conscious practice and towards Krishna. They see a Harinam group on the street chanting and immediately they think, wow, this is for me. Or they eat prasadam and they, even though they have been natural foods freaks, this is people who are in the habit of eating only natural food, no white sugar, like it's found in halwa. But if they taste this, they think, oh, yes, this is for me. To hell with my diet. Why is it that their fires, so to say, becomes enlightened? It is because they had contact to Krishna consciousness in their previous life, and therefore very easily by coming in contact with this transcendental movement, their ignorance goes and they recognize the eternal path which goes back home, back to Godhead. So I want to come to an end in today's short class by making a pertinent point. All of us are beginning transcendentalists, or we are quite for a long time in Krishna consciousness, we should take heart in what Krishna says here. This Krishna conscious activity is highly auspicious. In this holy dham, we should make the promise to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, "My Lord, please, if you so desire, let me engage in your service for the rest of my life." Lord Chaitanya will surely give us the desired or the necessary strength so that we become successful yogis. If Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, then let us not waste another life in this material world, but let us become fully determined, inspired Vaishnavas. Let us learn this philosophy and let us go back to our countries and completely immerse ourselves in our respective service, so that then we will be able to come to the desired goal of attaining Krishna's lotus feet in this lifetime. Krishna ends this chapter by preaching the glories of such a determination. He says, "Yoginam api sarveshang matkatena taratmana shadavan bhajate yomam sa me yukta tamo mata." And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much for giving a patient hearing. I must excuse myself, I was not prepared to give this lecture, I just went out in the blue. let us see, what is it? My watch is 5 minutes to 5, is that correct? Or that's right. So we have one question there. Yes, what is your name?
River Ragnar.
Please?
River
Ragnar. Oh, nice.
Hi Maharaj.
Please.
You seem to be saying at the beginning of the class that if we're in the dham here, we won't have any material desires and we can go back to the spiritual world.
You must speak Harvard English.
You seem to be saying that if we stay in the dham here,
yes,
we won't have any material desires and we can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. But if we go back to the West, to our Western countries, we will we'll have to deal with our material desires. But isn't it that even in the holy dham, you can still have material desires?
Oh, yes, certainly. I did not say that we have no material desires in the dham. I wanted to say that the material desires will be stronger in the West because there is not this protective influence. Therefore, while being in the holy dham, we should take the opportunities which are here to flood our material desires with Krishna conscious activities. At Kirtan, for instance, where you jump in and give your all and everything, will make you free of material desires. Or if you hear an inspiring talk on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, you will obtain a great conviction. If you see this Mayapur project, you can actually see that Krishna conscious life is successful, isn't it? Look at this Gurukul. Only a blind man would think, well, this doesn't work, this process. If you bath in the Ganga, you will be purified. If you even lay down in the holy dham, this is considered to be like dandavats. Food which you eat here it is described like this. It is all directly from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Every step you do are like thousands of Ashwamedha Yajnas. See, the Dham has such a potency. You may think, well, I'm thinking, it's not, what he says is not true. I'm thinking of the Australian veggie burgers all the time, which are not obtainable here, or the bliss bar. I'm full of material desires. But still, don't underestimate the potency of the Holy Dham. Prabhupada gave a very nice example. He said, when someone is the situation of someone drowning in an ocean is not quite the same as someone who has lost his consciousness in the ocean, but is on top of a boat. See, the one who is hallucinating on top of the boat, yes, he is thinking, I'm drowning, and goes through a whole nightmare, but in actuality he is saved. So therefore Prabhupada said, even the Muslim who slaughters a goat in the Holy Dham, he goes back to Godhead. Because this is the influence of the Dham. He may be in a completely different world, even in the Dham, but that's only the mind. His soul is residing in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's home. So therefore, I gave a lecture on this morning. Even though you might experience that your mind, also in the Holy Dham, manages the impossible to think of sense gratification. I'm putting it a little sarcastic, because it is not impossible to think of sense gratification in the Holy Dham. Just ignore the mind. You're here in Lord Chaitanya's own land. At every bath in the Ganga, every kirtan, every service, every bite of prasadam which you do has enormous transcendental benefit. Although our minds might hallucinate and think of Sydney, is that an example which King Cross? Cross King? It's just the mind. Nothing to do with you. And don't listen to the mind. Just bring your body into the kirtan. Bring it to prasadam. Bring it to the Krishna katha. And your stay in the Dham will be successful. Don't listen to the mind. Which can cheat you, like we were saying, the shadow example. Huh? So we want to finish our little presentation here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai!